The Holy Gospel for this first Sunday of Advent is recorded in Matthew, the 24th chapter. And Jesus said to his disciples, But about that day and hour no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days, before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together. One will be taken, one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. Your hands together. There you go. Hold on, I'm coming. That's the Advent message that in these turbulent times we are called to proclaim to a confused, scared, overwhelmed world. Hold on. The end of all things is near. Yes, you know what? It's already happening. Just like those disaster films out there that the world experiences about how it's going on. Except, as people of faith, our experience is quite different, quite hopeful. Hold on, because yes, this is the end of all the ages. Just as the great epic tales, Lord of the Rings and the Chronicles of Narnia proclaim, and the images we hear in Matthew's Gospel today are intended for us insiders, those who already believe, those who have been saved in the Lord Jesus Christ, we are being encouraged to hold on so we don't get distracted by all the stuff going on out there. From what we do know, you do know this, and what you are already part of. The end of time is already here. So hold on. Well, we use all sorts of fancy words in the church for the end times. Apocalypse, which means, really, the pulling back of the curtains to see what's already going on behind the scenes. And then there's this word eschatology, the study of the final things, the last things. And then this word we see in our gospel today a few times, and it's the word parousia, parousia. And it means the presence, the appearing of the Son of Man, the one who came in the birth, death, and resurrection of Jesus the Messiah and who is returning to wrap it up, all things up. Well, in the days of Matthew, the church was eagerly awaiting Jesus' return. Maranatha, they prayed. But as time wore on, it was 50 years after his ascension into heaven, and he wasn't coming back immediately, and they started to lose their edge, you know, not unlike how we do. They got distracted from their focus, their mission. So these wild images today are reminders to the faithful, make no mistake about it, Jesus is returning. He's coming again. So, when is it? We know not when, it says. Jesus tells us that. And the nature of the return, well, it could be quite cataclysmic, like Noah's flood, remember that, or like the one in Houston, where people are just busy going about their life, they're doing their thing, etc., and then it washes them away unknowingly. Or two people working in a field, it might be like this. One is left behind and one is taken. Or like two women, like this, grinding grain, and one is taken away and one is left behind. By the way, the word for left behind here is the same word that's used all over the Gospel of Matthew for forgiveness. The word is aphiemi, if you know your Greek, and now you know it. Aphiemi means forgiveness or being left, released, left, right? And so in the Gospel of Matthew, the blessed ones are the ones who were left behind. And all those stories, the stories in the apocalypse of Matthew, remember the 10 virgins who had enough oil in their lamps, they were prepared, they were left behind to enter the banquet. The others were swept away. Or the servants, the first two servants who invested their master's money so well, they were left behind to continue to enjoy management with the master, and the other was swept away. You know, it was the ones who understood these words of Jesus: I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison and you came to me. Jesus says, they were reminded, these faithful, whatever they did to the least of God's children, they were doing unto him. So the left behind ones are the blessed ones. That's us. Now, that's a huge disappointment, I know, for some of you who are fans of the Left Behind series, but it's fiction, and enjoy it as fiction, because this is how it is. We are the blessed left behind ones right now. Or Jesus suggests the complete final presence and appearing of Christ may come like more stealthily, like a thief who breaks into your house in the middle of the night, right? So again, those of us who are already part of the end game through our salvation in Christ Jesus, how are we to be in this time? Well, awake, alert, at our posts. Maybe not as scared as this, but awake, alert, because this is us. We are light on the hill, Jesus says. We are the candle in the dark. We are the presence of Christ in the darkness of this world. Little Christs, Martin Luther called us. So all of us end timers here, that's us. I want to strengthen you, encourage you, empower you by sharing a few stories of some of your faithful brothers and sisters who just kind of were open to being that presence of the coming Christ in what was facing them. Jane Addams, for instance. The mother of modern social work and the first female recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize in 1931. Well, how did that start? Well, she and her sister were spinsters living in their parents' old mansion in a rundown part of Chicago, on the west side of Chicago. And Jane was praying for guidance as to what they were to do with this old house of their parents, Hull House. And one night, her bedroom was up on the third floor there somewhere. One night, the thief climbed up the wall and snuck in her bedroom window with a crowbar in hand. She was terrified, as you can imagine, and she just kept her eyes closed as much as she could and pretended she was still sleeping, and she said she prayed like a son of a gun. As he went to her jewelry box and took out all the valuable jewelry and stuffed it in a pillowcase, and then he had one leg over the edge of the ledge of the window, and the only thing she could think to say was, you know, it would be safer if you just used the stairs. And there he sat, stood frozen on the windowsill for the longest time. And finally he just said back to her, I'm just trying to feed my starving children. Well, she talked him off the ledge, so to speak. He got back in, and they started talking about their family situation. And so she offered him a job, doing odd jobs at first. And then they started going to work, figuring out, what on earth is God calling us to do with this neighborhood? And one of the things that happened was they ended up turning the Hull House, that's this house, into a settlement house to give people a leg up to get started again who were who were having a hard time, these immigrants from various places who could not get jobs. And then it became clear there was no garbage service in this part of Chicago. I don't know why, but at any rate, so they decided to start a garbage service because the rat-infested garbage was really a life-threatening, health-threatening thing. And so they got it going. They hired a bunch of the immigrants so that they could support their families with the decent jobs, and the thing took off. And you know what? Guess who ended up being the president of the sanitation company? The thief who had broken into her bedroom. That's who became the president of the company. Jane Addams, awake, alert, being the parousia, the presence of Christ in her neighborhood and beyond, huh? Or Mr. Rogers in the movie It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. How many of you have seen it? A few of you. We just saw it yesterday. I don't want to spoil it, but it's not really about Mr. Rogers. Instead, it's about the people, the profound impact his presence, got that? His presence made on children and on adults. And particularly, especially in the life of a cynical writer who was sent to interview him from Esquire magazine. His real name is Tom Junod, and this movie is sort of his story, a little bit embellished. But at any rate, Tom Junod and his experience. If you want to see the article, look up Esquire magazine, Mr. Rogers, and you'll see it. Mr. Rogers, the gentle Presbyterian minister who saw the grossness and of TV and decided it should be used to witness to the good news. And that's what he did. All 31 years of his ministry there. Being the parousia, the presence of Christ to millions of children and adults. Just doing what was in front of him. Or another, this artist from Mexico City, Pedro Reyes. Through his art, he visibly demonstrated what was in the first reading that you heard, Keith reading from Isaiah. He shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not live up snored against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Well, the city of Calacan had the highest rate of gun deaths in all the cities of Mexico. This is back in 2015. And so the botanical gardens there were seeking an artist to make more of an impact on the city's campaign to eradicate dangerous weapons. Well, so Pedro Reyes came around and he offered to do this. He wanted to have them turn out, give coupons, certificates to people. If they brought in their weapons, they would get certificates to buy home appliances and things like that. It was a pretty major thing. And so when he collected 1,527 weapons, that's the number of people who had been killed in Culiacan. By the way, 40% of them were AK-47 assault-type weapons. He took them all to a military facility where they were steamrolled out, destroyed, smashed, and then smelted into shovel heads. And now 1,527 shovels were made. And they were distributed to schools and museums all over the place as he asked them to use them only for planting trees. 1,527 trees. And when he was interviewed about this project at one point, he said, I simply wanted to demonstrate how an agent of death can become an agent of life. Just doing what was in front of him with what God had given him to do, parousia, the presence of Christ where he was. So how about you, my fellow parousia partners, agents of the presence of Christ in this Advent season? How do we find what God's calling us to do, to be his presence?
Well, it's right in front of you. Whatever it is you're facing this day, the next day, and especially in this Advent season, are invited to especially pay attention. What is it in the world that's crying for the presence of Christ? And how can you be it? Besides, fellow people of the Parousia, agents of Christ's presence, you really do know what time it is. It's the end of the ages. That's what it is. And the salvation of the entire world is nearer now than when you first became a believer. So hold on. Be encouraged. Be empowered. Be emboldened. Keep your eye on the end game. You're already living in the parousia, the presence of Christ. Now be the parousia, the presence of Christ in this scary, dying, soon-to-end world. And in case you find yourself getting distracted like we all do from what we really do know, this Advent message is especially for you. And the other side.